And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is G Captain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of G Captain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles and in the studio with me is John Conrad. Welcome, John. How are you today?
Doing good.
All right. Good to see you. This broadcast is for the week of January 13th, 2014. Listeners, this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. We have several interesting things to talk about today. Of course, the weather has been in the news a lot lately. So along with foul weather comes some bad storms. So we'll talk about those storms a little bit, as well as an industry that is, of course, closely linked to how the weather is out there on the ocean, and that's the fishing industry. So we'll talk about that. There was an interesting article that was written about the fishing industry, and John has some thoughts on that. So we'll see what he thinks about that article. And after Christmas, we've got the Lego set to top all Lego sets that came out, and I want to see if I can get my son one, so we'll talk about that. Well, we are firmly into the new year now, John. We can't really say Happy New Year anymore, because if you're not out there and doing it, you're a little behind the time. So how are things going for you so far this year?
They're going pretty good. We are doing a major update to GCaptain, brand new servers going online. And should be happening, hopefully, by the time you hear this broadcast.
Good. And the upgrade is going to do what for GCaptain? Make it faster, I would assume?
It's going to make it faster. And when we have real popular content, sometimes things slow down. And sometimes the forum members can't post to the forum. Mm. The server shuts down certain features when it gets overloaded. But we're distributing the servers globally, going to a cloud format, and should really improve the experience.
Well, good. That's good to hear. Those are the kind of problems that I suppose as a service provider you want to have. Too many people coming to your site and slowing it down. But on the other end, for the users, that can be frustrating. So I'm glad that that will be resolved, and congratulations on the success that GCaptain is having with the readers.
Yeah, it's not the most exciting update. You know, in my house, I replaced old house, 50 years old. I replaced all the electrical, and my wife didn't really understand the need for that. But then I put up a little, that took me months, and then I put up a little shelf for her. It took me an hour, and she was, oh, thank you. So this is kind of like that. A lot of the users hopefully won't notice, but major doings behind the scenes.
Good. Well, good. And GCaptain continues to grow, I would imagine, in terms of the number of visitors that you get to the site?
Yes, growing every month. It's pretty incredible.
Well, good. And, you know, we haven't talked about this in a while. What would you attribute the success of GCaptain to? You were there at the beginning, correct? You helped found it?
Yes.
So what do you think you hit? What combination did you hit here that provided for the success of the site?
I think the most important thing is listening to our readership. You know, you get a magazine, publish a magazine, and it's hard to tell which stories really sparked interest. Some people may, you know, mail letters or even email the editor when something really grabs them, but that's not really accurate statistics. We can really get statistics for all of our articles. So when we hit a chord with people, we can relate that to other articles that really hit a chord. And we're just having... you know, in the beginning, we didn't have millions of visitors a month. So a lot of it was, you know, just my being a real editor, kind of guessing at what people were interested in. But now it almost tells itself, works itself. You know, if a ship crashed in San Francisco Bay right now, my iPhone would light up, my email would light up with tips, insider thoughts, and so it's really listening to our readers and finding out, reading the comments. We do a lot of time, spend a lot of time reading the forum and the comments and finding out what really interests people.
And the fascinating thing about technology these days, one of the fascinating things is you can get that feedback, that information real time, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, which obviously was not available for print media. Something like a magazine, a maritime magazine from 20 years ago, wouldn't have a clue as far as that type of interest from their readership.
Yeah, and I think a large part of it is just being curious. Everyone at GCaptain myself included. I mean, a lot of the reason, the greatest thing about running G Captain is I can call anyone up and ask my stupid questions.
Right.
Pretend I'm a journalist, and I love that. And I think most of our readers are curious people, and you know, it's really curiosity that sparks a lot of the articles.
Very good. Well, again, congratulations on the success of the site. Listeners, we appreciate you viewing the site and appreciate you listening to our weekly radio show as well. So, John, let's get into the meat of a few of the things that we're going to talk about today. I mentioned the weather. We've had storms around the world combined with some pretty dramatic weather here in the United States as far as these Arctic chills. Let's talk about the weather first a little bit, and then we'll move into a story that's related to that, really, the fishing industry, in an article that was written that really touched some nerves in terms of what's going on in the fishing industry. So these storms, what have you seen from the storms? We know that back east, folks are very, very cold. We've had minus double-digit temperatures back east.
Well, it's been like summertime here.
Really an exceptional dichotomy, usually not quite this dramatic. So,
but we also are suffering from one of the largest droughts in recent history.
Very true.
We could use a storm.
We have no real snowpack right now, and all our reservoirs are literally at about 15% up to a high of about 30% of capacity. Right. I just drove through some of the reservoirs. I was in the Sierras over holiday break, and it was amazing how low those reservoirs are right now. So we may be basking in the sunlight right now, but we may be in dire straits a little bit later this year as we're having to conserve or ration our water. So as far as the ocean storms, we had some things going on down in the Arctic. We've had some ships that have been abused by some of these storms. What's your observation on the storm watch?
Yes, you have this Arctic vortex that's really bringing this cold weather down, and just large low pressure systems that are wreaking havoc. This confluence of events has been made it a little bit difficult for the weather forecasters to predict, you know, where the real bad weather is, and it's hit a number of ships.
I've got to throw something in there really quick, John. As you know, I'm an investment manager and an armchair economist. So there's an old joke that we have as economists. Do you know why God invented weather forecasters?
Why?
To make economists look good. Because we are historically and famously not too close with our predictions, but the weatherman makes us look good. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. I had to throw that in there.
Well, it's interesting. Computer and computer networking is one of my interests. I was reading up about the original supercomputers and the things we thought that. And one of the major reasons for the development of the first supercomputer, I believe, was used for the census, but it was also NOAA has been a big supporter of supercomputers from early on. They were one of the earliest users. And we thought that being able to bring together all this data from around the world would give us accurate predictions. And NOAA does an excellent job. I use the NOAA weather maps, the weather facts. I think they're the most accurate product out there. But still, you only have a few days of true accuracy.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a limited science, actually much like economics. There's some science to it, but then on the other hand, it's a bit of an art as well.
So we have these incidents that are happening. This MERS Stepnica had to go into the port of Felixstowe, which is in the UK, because the containers toppled over. And then there's been a large crack in the MSC Monterey, a large container ship that's currently up in Canada. And the OOCL Belgium container ship taking 40 degrees rolls and near grounding in Lisbon, and just these deep freeze conditions in the U.S. So no major casualties that we've heard about as far as multiple deaths or sinkings, but a lot of small incidents causing damage.
So this is a stress test for vessels that are out on the water. This test those tolerance.
Thousands of very uncomfortable mariners right now.
Yeah. So as far as storm preparation, storm safety procedures, you're a sea captain, you've sailed through storms, you were in charge of vessels during storms. What would you look out for as far as storms? I've got a thought in my head, but I want to see if it's correct at all from my vast 2 years of experience as an ordinary seaman out on the water. So I've got my thought, but I want to ask you as a captain.
Well, I remember seeing my first major storm as a cadet and getting excited at the weather facts. And the captain came over and looked at me. He goes, "You can always tell the new guys are excited by a storm, and those of us who have been around a little while go, oh shit, not another one."
Right. Yeah.
So, but it's really, you know, there's good communication, satellite communication. You have all the weather information you can use. Most companies hire weather routers who help you analyze your data and tell you if you're really getting in trouble. But most of the weather routing and the final authority is by the captain. And the way to do it, the way I find most accurate, is you take the NOAA weather charts, the 12, 48, 96-hour predictions, and I tape them all up on the wall. And the 500 millibar chart is probably the most important. And Lee Chesnow is a former, one of NOAA's top forecasters. He wrote a whole book on the 500 millibar. That's a really important chart to look at. But getting all this information up on a wall, and then when you get an update, when you get the next update, 6 hours later, pasting those right over it and see how accurate NOAA is and where the storm's really moving. And if you do this for a day or two, you start to get a good mental picture of where the storm is going, and that seems to me to be the most accurate. You can do computer modeling, and a lot of the sailors on smaller boats use these GRIB formats, which now you can get on your iPad and it'll automate the whole process and really good stuff. But I just feel getting those paper NOAA weather facts charts up on the wall and having a chronological record of what's happening is the best way to approach it. And then transmitting your intentions back to the company and having a weather router say, you know, double check your work pretty much and say, okay, this is a good idea, let's do it. Or that's the important part, that the captain checks the weather router or vice versa. You know, there have to be those checks and balances.
So this might be a good segue into our next segment, because I'll tell you, the thought that was running through my mind was that if there's a big storm out there, you do whatever is in your power to avoid it. In other words, to not be in it.
Yes, that's the most important thing.
However, if you have a profit motive behind you or your livelihood pushing you to be out there in that storm, then we've got a conflict created. So the kind of boats that I sailed on, they were research vessels, 285-foot research vessels. If there was a storm, we ran like hell, because we didn't. There was no need for us to go through. We weren't scheduled on the other side of that. Well, sometimes we were scheduled to pick up equipment, but it wasn't. You know, we weren't going to lose a ton of money. Plus, it was government money. If we didn't get someplace on schedule. But it's different if you've got tankers or containers, and especially for fishing vessels, and particularly for small family fishing vessels. So as a sea captain that worked for commercial vessels, did you ever experience sort of this conflict that exists between safety and the pursuit of profits?
All the time. It's a constant concern. But the companies are really good once the vessels are underway. In my experience, of going hundreds of miles out of your way because of a storm is not a problem. They'd rather you do that than damage the vessel or put the crew at risk. So that isn't a major problem. What the problem happens is when a storm's approaching and you're still in port, and do we load those extra containers, or do we head out to sea before we're fully loaded? That can, you know, if they leave containers behind, that can cause major problems for the shipping companies. On drill ships particularly, you have all this equipment that connects the drill ship down into the wellhead, the riser, the subsea, and it takes time to each you know, you could be drilling in up to 10,000 feet of water and you have 10,000 feet of this large riser pipe and a BOP that weighs hundreds of tons at the seafloor bottom. All that has to come up before you can get underway. And the companies aren't making money as long as that equipment is up. So often, you know, and the poor companies, they delay, wait till the last minute to pull up all that riser. And then if the storm moves or gains speed, you can really be caught in a bad situation. So I'd say there isn't really, I haven't seen, you know, ships not want to divert, but it's really, do we leave port early to give ourselves a little more buffer, or do we head to a closer port or change routes? Those are the type of questions that are still sometimes in the zone of murky water.
Very interesting. And an interesting dilemma that both the companies and captains must face on a fairly regular basis. Well, we wish our fellow mariners, all our brothers and sisters out there at sea, safe travels.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Any final thoughts on this, John, the issue of or the subject of weather? Because what I want to do is take a break here for a moment and recognize our sponsor, and then we'll come back and talk about an article that was written about the fishing industry, and weather plays a part in that as well.
Well, that's the fishing industry is different, because whether I stay in port as a mariner or go, I'm getting a paycheck either way. With the fishing boats, if they don't go out, they may not make the mortgage that month. So I guess we could talk about that after the break.
Very good. Okay. Well, listeners, stick around. We're going to take a brief break here to recognize our sponsor, Six Maritime, and we'll be back in a moment.
Six Maritime is a leading provider of professional security services for the maritime industry. Using state-of-the-art military and industry practices, Six Maritime provides clients with tailor-made, cost-effective solutions that ensure both safety and security in every environment. Six Maritime specializes in the use of early threat detection technology for both mobile and immobile clients, giving them increased warning time to any threat. Avoid the violence, deter attackers, keep your crew and cargo safe. Leading the next generation of security, logistically simple, technologically advanced. Six Maritime. To learn more, visit sixmaritime.com.
Thank you for staying with us, and thank you to Six Maritime for being a sponsor of the show. We appreciate their support. So, John, there was an interesting article posted on GCaptain about commercial fishing, and it was written by, I think, a New York Times writer?
The original article appeared in the New York Times. It was the cover of the New York Times Magazine, so that's their featured article of the week, their top article of the week last week. It was called A Speck in the Sea, and it was about this commercial fisherman who was fishing off 40 miles off the coast of Montauk, which is the end of Long Island in New York, and alone on deck, was going to move a cooler, and the handle broke off as he's pulling this, and he fell off the side. No life jacket, no one saw him. The ship was on autopilot. There was no one else awake. And suddenly he's in the water, and his boat's steaming away from him. Mm-hmm. Thrilling tale, very well written article by the New York Times, and really going into the heroics of the Coast Guard and the massive search they do. Did, which was successful. But Mario Vitone, he was a rescue swimmer for the Coast Guard. He jumped out of helicopters to save people and then became the head of the rescue swimmer school, the chief instructor there, and Coast Guard Man of the Year a few years ago. So one of the Coast Guard's top rescue experts. He retired last year and now runs a safety consulting business, which teaches people how to survive at sea and how to operate vessels safely. But he wrote kind of a rebuttal to this article saying, yeah, it's a great article, feel-good article. We're glad it worked out well from them. But he pointed out some major problems that he sees in the fishing industry, things that aren't being solved. And he calls this particular incident, he said it was completely avoidable by taking a few safety steps. He said the fault, the real reason here, and big part of the problem why we continue to lose so many fishermen at sea is really this culture of fishermen, which is accept danger, and they believe that it is a dangerous profession, and if you're going to go out there and make your living at sea, that you have to accept that danger. But in having that attitude, which is very strong male attitude of I'm going to take that risk, they often completely shut off their brains. It seems to be all or nothing is what Mario, we either go out there or you stay safe and get a land job. But there are some steps that the fishing industry could take to avoid a large majority of these incidents. And Mario jumps out and points these things out.
Now, you were speaking about risk, and a lot of thoughts are going through my mind because I've done a lot of statistical research on risk, as well as our emotional response to risk as human beings. And risk generally is measurable. And so for a fisherman, I could see how emotionally, at an emotional level, they might have a switch that, well, the risk isn't necessarily quantifiable in their mind. They just flip the switch in their mind and they accept that risk as a bundled risk, and it's a risk and I'm going to take it. Thus, they may not very accurately measure that risk, and this could be what Mario is referring to. If they don't accurately measure that risk, they won't take the countermeasures to reduce or mitigate that risk.
Excellent point.
Very interesting, because a lot of these same principles come into risk management within managing investments and portfolio management. I do want to back up a second, John, on weather, because what I also find very interesting about this is what we're talking about right now. We just talked in the prior segment about weather-related dangers. This stuff really doesn't seem related to weather.
No, I mean, weather causes a lot of fishing incidents, and I don't know how they do it. I was on an almost 1,000-foot crude oil tanker going up to Valdez, Alaska, and some of the weather I experienced there, I'm looking down at the fishermen, and I'm saying, my 1,000-foot boat isn't big enough. I want a 2,000-foot boat. I don't know how they're doing it on a 100, 200-foot boat. But no, this happened in relatively good weather, this incident in Montauk. And I think that's an excellent point you made about not assessing the risk properly. I think there's also a psychological component that we don't like to think about, the negative. It is a dangerous job, and if you dwell on those dangers, you're going to have a potentially emotional breakdown. So I think there's also this protection. Fishermen don't spend a lot of time discussing the NOAA perb and life jackets and all these measures. They don't go browsing in West Marine down the safety aisle, because all of that really brings to their mind how dangerous it is. One of the suggestions, Mario, he says, EPIRBs are now tiny. They clip right onto your life jacket, and they only cost $250. Now, he's saying...
And EPIRBs, by the way, just for our listeners, emergency position indicating radio beacons. I'm sure most of our listeners know what those are, but for the ones that don't, they send out an emergency signal and allow the Coast Guard to locate you.
Yes. Anywhere in the world, you press this button and it automatically tells the Coast Guard exactly where you are. If this guy Aldridge, who was mentioned in the article, had one, he would have been rescued very quickly. But Aldridge didn't even have a life jacket on. Workout on deck alone, which was incredible. But he said, Mario said that, this is... what he wrote exactly, less than $300 buys you about 6 years of help insurance in the event that you fall off your wide open lobster boat while working alone at night, with or without a life jacket. Caution, fishermen, he calls this a disease among fishermen, commercial fishermen disease, this avoidance of risk taking. He says, caution, CFD can make you believe that $275 is too much money to spend. If I was stranded offshore in the water, Mario says, I'd trade my left leg for one. Right. And that's another part of the problem with the fishermen. They're working on such large margins that $275 is a major expense for them. And you add in life jackets and life rafts and all the other expenses they have to go through. It is a burden, but one that we can't just brush off and say, okay, this is a dangerous job. We have to accept it. Now, in the commercial maritime world, we've been forced by insurance companies to, we have to have EPIRBs. We have to have wear life jackets on deck. We have to, because it's mandated by the company. If you don't do it, you will be fired. The reason it's mandated by the company is because if they don't prove that we're doing this, the insurance rates will skyrocket. But a small fisherman doesn't have that financial impetus. He has the opposite, a financial impetus to skirt the rules. And it leads to dangerous situations.
We live in Morro Bay here, and we're on the central coast of California, and we are in one of the few remaining working fishing harbors on in California anyway. There's some other large ones on the Pacific seaboard, but we're one of the smaller ones left here in California, and we do have a fishing fleet that goes out of our bay. We do have a death that unfortunately we experience about once every, I'd say, 3 or 4 years. And typically what has happened, you know, unfortunately, and it's sad and disturbing to talk about, but what generally happens is the boat is on autopilot, or they tie the wheel down, which sometimes is their form of autopilot, the Iron Mike, and they're heading out and they're tending their net. They're either pulling it in or letting it out, or they're doing something out on the fantail of the boat, and they get caught in the net and go over. And there's nothing, they don't use safety lines, seldom use safety lines, and there's really nothing they can do at that point. So we have our Fisherman's Memorial here at one of our parks, at Anchor Park, and it has a couple dozen names of fishermen on it that we've lost over the last couple of decades. So it does exist. I'm going to talk about something that really is a little sensitive here too, and I don't mean any offense at all to anyone in the fishing industry, particularly the smaller vessels and the family fishermen. It seems too that with risk and how it's regarded, it is almost at times regarded as a badge of honor.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned the word macho, or you didn't say macho, but a manly thing to accept that risk, that there maybe is some virtue in accepting that risk. And I've seen the same thing. You know, we've got, again, we have a fishing community here in our town, and the risk is recognized, but it seldom seems to be quantified. It is put out there as one large monolithic thing, this risk that we must endure as fishermen and fisherwomen. And we're willing to accept that. And that's almost a sense of pride. And I'm just thinking out loud with you and the listeners here and wondering too, sometimes if that sense of pride or that badge of honor then helps those people not recognize that risk and not do things that they should be doing to mitigate that risk.
Yes, and it's unfortunate because there's so much to be proud about being a fisherman. I mean, they're all small business owners. You own a small business. I run G Captain, which is still a relatively small business, and it's the hardest job in America. The CEO is the last to get paid. You have bills, you have creditors, things that you don't understand, not within your expertise. But now fishermen have a small business, but their building is always moving, always needing repairs, always risking complete damage. They're going out against the elements. A lot of the environmental concerns are against them, trying to shut them down. They have a lot more regulations than you and I have. They go out in this bad weather, and it's dangerous. There's so much to be proud about. Why do we need, it seems almost like, yeah, I agree 100%, it's a badge and an honor, but it seems to me, as a bit of an outsider, that, you know, it's kind of a superfluous badge of honor, mm-hmm. that they already have a number of impressive badges of honor. They just being a fisherman, it's a tough job that I don't know that I have the, especially in the bad weather, that would be difficult for me to do. A lot to be proud of, what I'm saying. And you know, all Mario is asking, he said, very simple checks that you don't work alone unless you absolutely have to, that you wear a life jacket, and it doesn't have to be a full big life jacket. Now they have the inflatable ones that can tuck right in your work. They don't get caught on anything, and that you carry an EPIRB, but you don't even have, last week, one example, I went out just a couple miles offshore in the ocean here, and I put on a life jacket. I was by myself, and I clipped on, I have an EPIRB, I didn't use it because I was only a few miles, and I clipped my $60 waterproof handheld VHF. Now if I go in, just take that VHF, I'm a few miles, I can call the Coast Guard. But when I came in, one of the fishermen asked, he said, "What, is there bad weather out there?" You know, and he wasn't even teasing me. He was like, he thought there were big swell. I said, "No, it's beautiful weather." He said, "Why are you wearing a life jacket?" So it seems, and maybe he was making fun of me, because I'm willing to, I ride around town with a bike helmet and I don't care. Doesn't affect me, but you know, it's why not? Why not put it on the life jacket? It's small enough, inflatable, comfortable, and clip that radio on. It's a very simple measures that.
Yeah. Well, it's an ounce of prevention, and again, you know, when you weigh the risk versus, I'm thinking investments now, but when you weigh risk and reward, in this case, it's really risk versus consequence. You taking those small measures, you know, maybe it's a little overkill, maybe the odds of you needing that protection are extremely small, but should you have that black swan event, should you have that one in a million event, the consequences are so dire. In essence, the consequence is loss of life, that it's worth, of course, taking those measures that you probably will never need.
And you know who wears a life jacket every time they go on deck and carries the EPIRB, does that expense?
Coast Guard?
The Coast Guard does it, but the guys, like, I can almost say I guarantee this man Aldridge is wearing one from now on. There's an element of disbelief in just customary human. Good friend of mine doesn't have smoke detectors up in his house. Mm. I went to his house and I insisted right then. He had them in a drawer that we put them up. My dad was a fireman. I've seen fires. I know how good. But until we see it personally, it's hard to believe. But, you know, I tend to trust people who have been there, done that, had the experience. You know, maybe we have to learn from them, because everyone who's fallen off their fishing vessel, I can guarantee, is already taking these steps, and it's not going to happen to them again.
Well, and I blurted out Coast Guard as a guess, but the thought that hit me after that too is, you know, they're trained, and they're on very seaworthy vessels.
And a lot of experiencing people not wearing life jackets.
Exactly, and look at what they do. Every time they go out there, and they're even when they're in our bay here, they're in their life jackets. So the best trained with the best equipment, and they're young and healthy, take those type of precautions. So I think there's something to be learned in that right there as well. So very interesting observations in terms of risk. We are about out of time already, John. As usual, we get into these discussions and it's really interesting stuff to talk about, and time flies. So closing thoughts with regard to the story that was written and our fishing industry.
The only thing that really surprised me is that the New York Times picked this story. There are so many stories I think that are more interesting or definitely have more drama in it than this. But I think the higher ups in the fishing industry and the Coast Guard is going to read this and enact some changes and demand that, you know, more fishermen wear life jackets and stuff. But, you know, it was, I don't know how the New York Times decided on this particular story. It's an interesting one, but there are hundreds of others like it that don't get the attention of this and lessons learned. And it's a lot of what GCAP tries to do, is get those stories that the traditional media misses, and so we can learn the lessons from them.
Yes, very well said. Okay. Well, that was a good show, John. Thank you for coming in today. And listeners, thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. G-Captain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.